And I said, because today things are bought, they aren't sold.
Oh, I've been saying that all week.
Oh, my new co-author. Hi.
So let me share with you, if you use the phrase, people don't like to be sold, but they love to buy, I own it. You'll have to send me a quarter or maybe even a dollar. Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the greatest podcast on the planet for anybody who's involved in sales, personal development, or anything having to do with success. We're it. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling and the Sales Manifesto, and
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. I have something funny to tell you. I just asked Gabrielle, your daughter, who's 10, if she wanted to take some behind the scenes of our podcast and post it on my Instagram because she's doing my story today. She just didn't know it yet. And she goes, sure, Jen, but I have to be available for my followers too.
No, you didn't understand. Yeah. Gabrielle has hit viralness today.
Oh, man. It's so
she
amazing.
Did something on
TikTok
and is up to 60,000 likes.
Yeah, it's insane.
And she's now hair flipping.
Oh, my God.
Reveal her prowess to all who are here in the proximity.
So
60,000 likes
insane.
For a 10-year-old.
Hold on a minute.
Raise your hand if you have 60,000 likes total in your life.
Just don't raise your hand and drive.
Okay, that's true. But she got them literally in 2 hours.
Well, this is pretty cool, Jeffrey. I'm switching gears a little bit, but I know that you...
Which gear is that?
Yeah, the sales gear. Oh. I know that you went back and looked at the last 40 years, four decades of selling.
Speaking of 2 hours.
Yeah, and I know that you analyzed all of your sales and tried to figure out what was the thing, the common
right.
thing.
Right, what made it happen.
Yeah.
That's true. So here, diehard, just hang for 1 second here. I'm a sales guy. You may know me as an author. You may know me as a speaker, but I'm a New York City trained sales guy. And I trained for 1 year before I ever went to New York by taking 4 hours of sales training every morning. Then I go to New York and I'm killing it. But I wanted to figure out, I just went and bragged about it like anybody else would and made $1 million sales, made some $100,000 sales, but predominantly million plus sales. And I pretty much forgot about it. I just used it as part of my storehouse of knowledge and went home and, you know, started to write. Well, I went back and analyzed them, and this is what I found. There was one thing that I did in every single sale that created an opportunity for me to sell at my price with no competition and let the customer feel like they were getting the deal of a lifetime.
Even if they were,
you have 1 second to prove you're different, and that's it. I'm going to be giving a 3-part webinar on how amazing this incredible differentiating factor was.
But it feels like 5 parts because you're giving 3 virtual seminars.
Yeah, for more than an
plus
hour.
Yeah. 2 Q&A. Group coaching video sessions. So you're getting access to Jeffrey like 5 times. It's going to be amazing. If you upgrade to the super VIP, then you get 4 group coaching sessions instead of 2, and you get an exclusive leadership event. But all those details are on cgittimer, S-E-E, gittimer.com. And the link's in the show notes, obviously. Just go check it out, cgittimer.com. Now, let's get
to
today's show.
Cgittimer.com?
Like S-E-E, I'm going to see you, Gittimer, cgittimer.com. Yeah, so on today's show, we have a very special guest. His name is Oren Claff. He's the author of Pitch Anything and director of capital markets at an investment bank, Intersection Capital. He's talking to us about his brand new book, Flip the Script, Getting People to Think Your Idea is their idea.
Whoa.
Dun, dun, dun. But before we get to Oren, let's read a 5-star review.
Okay.
Dr. Cindy, who has been gracious enough to give us a 5-star review, she writes today, Jeffrey and Jennifer's energy, humor, and obvious experience make them a very powerful duo. The variety of guests keep content fresh and relevant. They're easy to listen to, will keep you engaged, and you'll take in tons of usable advice. Any professional—
Tons? Wait, tons of usable advice?
Tons, yes. Metric tons of usable advice.
Love that.
Any professional, sales or not, will enjoy learning from this podcast. Now, it would behoove me to remind everybody— Every single 5-star review that we get, we will read on air. You will hear your feedback on this podcast, Sell or Die. So please leave them. Again, make me work. Put me to work. And therefore, we can have your reviews on air.
This guy, Oren Clapp, you're gonna totally love this guy. His books are Fortune 10 material. That are written at a level of, if you're a 100-er or a 1,000-er, you can still read it, understand it, and implement it. I'm going to get to this interview, but I'm going to challenge you, mark this so you can listen to it 2 times or 3 times, because this guy is right on the money. Diehards, please welcome the great Oren Clapp.
When you wrote Pitch Anything, did you expect it to be as big of a bestseller as it's become?
Oh, thank you for asking that. No. And I'll tell you a funny story. My agent called me after the book came out. Totally different from this book launch, you know, that we're talking about here. My agent called me and she goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm working, doing my job." She said, "Why are you not in your car going to book signings?" Right? Even William Shatner does book signings, right? And I said, "Well, William Shatner should have written a good book." So,
exactly.
I had no list. I couldn't imagine, you know, driving to West Hollywood to sign 4 books for, you know, a couple of little old ladies who stumbled in there by mistake. And so, no, I never thought it would just, with zero marketing, go to 1 million book sales and just be. And just, I know we got a lot to get to, but. I just did a podcast with a guy in Russia and he holds up the book. I know what books I have because they send me the copies and it's in 20 different languages. I go, "I've never seen that book." So there are people publishing Pitch Anything as hardbacks without licensing it because they like the book. So it's just amazing what happened with Pitch Anything.
Isn't that called stealing?
No, I don't care. You know.
Yeah, but listen, here's the deal on that. Book signings do not work for people that are not celebrities.
Right.
But signed books do work.
Yes.
Jen and I will travel around the country. Wherever we hit a Barnes & Noble or an airport bookstore, we sign the books and immediately they're gone.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah.
Yeah, that signed sticker is huge.
Yeah, we're trying to be smart. It's not easy when you don't come from California.
I know, but Jen is good looking. Look at us.
That's true. Yeah, that does help us. I totally agree. I try to stand right behind her.
Yeah. Hide behind her. I think. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So you have a new book coming out.
I do. The book is Flip the Script. It is insane. Like, I can't believe the book. It's and I say that because I wrote it. You know, so you sign a book deal, right? And they go, "When's the book going to be ready?" Right? And you go, "It's not ready today." And they're like,
"Right, exactly."
So it'll be ready in 7 months. So you're not going to believe this. In 7 months, they call you and they go, "Where's the book?" I go, "Oh yeah, it's done." So I go to send it. My finger is hovering over the send button. And I go, "It's not the Oren Clapp second book." I go, "I can't send it." They go, "No problem. We'll extend the deadline." Right. The day the deadline's due, they're like, "Please send the book." I go to send it. It's amazing. I love it. But I read it one last time. I go, it's good. I like it. But it's not Oren Clapp's second book.
Gotcha, Oren. I love personal integrity. I think it's like the best thing you can have, writer's integrity.
Oh, yeah. So what did you do?
So I said to myself, "By the work, one knows the workman." And it was good.
Wait. Who said that? Like Cicero or something?
My dad.
Oh. All through high school.
Mr. Clef.
Yeah. It was an academic professor, and he'd say, "Oren, by the work, you know the workman." And I go, "What the fuck are you talking about?" So, but now, 40 years later, you know, I understand. Okay, so I go, "I can't send. It's not done." And they're like, "No, deadline." So I go, "I can't. It's not." So then 2 years after I started it, 2 years, I finally, it was done. I held my little boy in the lap, right? And he went to hit the send button on the book. Finally, and he pressed send, and whoosh, they're going to print at this point whatever you send them, right? It can be slam poetry. Print it.
Right? Yeah. You had to pick up girls in bars, and they would.
They don't care because it's there. It's your name on it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, that's true. They're like, yeah, we got to put you through the legal process. Okay, that's done. It took an hour. It's your name on it. So my little boy, 5 then, press send. The book rushes off, whoosh. And he turns to me and goes, "Dad, please never write another book." So this book is out of control. I've had people going, "Look, every chapter is a book in terms of content and quality." And I believe that. So it's really, I think it's going to be a game changer for what a book should do for a reader, what you should get in terms of quality and content today, right? Because you can get so much stuff on a blog. I got in a fight with Seth Godin, but you know, a lot of those guys are doing a 100 blog posts and mash that onto paper and call it a book, you know.
And, yeah, not good.
And so I think it's going to raise the bar for what defines a book today. Anyway,
I want to interject something. The same thing happened to me with the Little Red Book of Selling. Ray Bard wanted the book in 6 months. A year later, I said, "It's not done yet."
Huh. Yeah.
A year later, I said, "It's still not done yet." And finally, after about 2 years and 3 months, I submitted the book.
Whoa.
Yeah. So here's what I say. The people tell me, "Oh, I'm going to write a book," because they heard about all the great things about books. And of the many things I'm telling them, the book will know when it's done.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that.
Okay. So we believe you. We can like feel your passion.
No, we think you're full of shit, and we're calling you out right now.
No, we can feel your passion coming through the screen of how good this book's going to be. So give us some details. Come on,
give us a little clue.
What's Flip the Script about?
So not long ago, a guy walks into my office and we pitch him. What we do is we help buy and sell companies. And, you know, it's about a 45-minute pitch, and they have to think about it because they have a CFO and they have a board of directors and they have a wife and founders. And it's a $30, $40 million decision, right? So they don't typically go, "You're hired," after 45 minutes. So the guy leaves, shake hands, "Very nice. We really like it. Send over paperwork, etc." He leaves, right? Whew, sit down. That was a tough pitch. And then about 60 seconds later, he comes back in. This is never good, right? It usually means they've gone to their car and gotten a gun. It's not good when people leave and then come back in. They either forgot their charger or they're walking back in with a gun. So he walks back in the conference room, and I'm watching what's going on. And he reaches in his bag and he takes out a checkbook. He writes a check for $15,000, which I don't understand because we don't sell anything for $15,000. And he writes a check. He goes, "Hey, let's get started." You know, so some of our stuff's $1 million. Some of our stuff's $150,000. Some of our stuff's $1,000. So anyway, he goes, "Let's get started." Hands me the check. And this time he leaves for real. And so that is how our sales have started going, right? There's no point in the sale where you go, "So, Mr. Jones, what do you think? Is this something we should do together? Do you have any questions?"
Yeah, right? "So, Mr. Jones, what do you think?" That is the top of the line bullshit trial close.
Yeah. It's where deals go to die. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But people don't know what to do differently. And so for years I've helped people develop what to do at that point when the pitch is over, and then convert it into a conversation about a deal. But now this book is about inception, about how the buyer comes up with the idea to buy from you on their own. Because when the idea comes from inside the buyer that he wants to move forward, it's incredibly strong and resilient and powerful. When the idea comes from you that he should buy from you, it's weak, it's subject to falling apart, and it is always subject to discounting. So when the buyer goes, you know what? I want to work with these guys. I want to buy this. I want to do this. That idea. So how do you bring the buyer to the point where without you saying, so what do you think, Mr. Jones? Press hard. Fifth copy's yours.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you bring him to the point where he just goes, I'm in. What are the next steps to move forward? So that's what this book is about. And this book, it Flip the Script was not necessary 10 years ago or 50 years ago. Because that's one of the things when I started working with Random House, they go, why now? And they said, because today things are bought. They aren't sold.
Oh, I've been saying that all week.
Oh yeah. So.
Oh my God.
Oh, my new co-author. Hi.
So let me share with you, if you use the phrase, people don't like to be sold, but they love to buy.
Yeah.
I own it. You'll have to send me a quarter or maybe even a dollar.
Oh, really? Because you know, when they put the fragile stuff on when you go to the grocery market and they put the cans at the bottom and the eggs at the top, I own that patent. So you have to send me a quarter.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. So
let us do the jokes, Arne.
Oh, all right. So your book is about getting people to think that your idea is really their own idea.
Yes.
How do you do that? Give us some ways.
How do you put the things in their mind, your ideas? So they move around and they percolate and they marinate and they gel. And so this is actually, movie writers do this. Procedural TV shows do this. You know, there's lots of commercials do this. Lots of people do this to you, right? But those are the scientists and the trained people. Know you as, and really, my books are less for really experienced salespeople than workaday people, engineers and, you know, house moms and people who don't sell all day long and need to know a process. You know, I help lots of salespeople for sure, but this is material for people who aren't selling all day and aren't experienced sales ninjas. If you are, you know, an engineer, you're starting a company, you are, you know, like my brother, a few times you have to sell, but most of the time you have to do, what's a process you can use effectively? You know, what's a blueprint you can follow without being a sales guy? And the book takes you out of the realm of needing to be a sales guy, because there's no selling at all. So yeah. So what's the method? You know, I think for me, there's three things. One is, how does somebody know that you're an expert? How does somebody know that you've done this 1,000 times? And how does somebody know how they're allowed to buy from you? Those, I think, are the keys, right? Because I don't get too nuanced here, but you cannot tell someone what to do. You cannot tell someone how to act, and you cannot tell someone what to say. If you do that successfully, it will come back on you. You can't tell people what to do, what to say, or how to act, right? So you can't control people, but you can control yourself. So if you are an expert, if they believe you've solved their kind of problem 1,000 times, you have integrity and values, and you show them how to buy from you, and they need and want what you have, you can control yourself by taking yourself more and more away from them. And that's what makes them want to buy. In Pitch Anything I wrote, people want what they can't have. People chase that which moves away from them. And people only value that which they pay for. So if they believe you're an expert, you've solved that problem that they have specifically 1,000 times, and there's a way to buy from you, then you'll be heading into inception.
Brilliante. The challenge that you have, though, is that it makes people rethink the way they've been taught by their trainer, their boss, their marketing department, and all the other bullshit that goes with it. You know, they get a set of slides from marketing. What do they do with those?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I called it Flip the Script, not do the same thing you've been doing.
I thought it was called Delete the Slides.
It makes me think of, like, we have dogs, and it makes me think of when a dog, when you start chasing a dog that's trying to like get loose or run away, they think you're playing a game and they keep running. Whereas if you just stand still, they come towards you.
Or if you run the other way, they come chasing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. So I start with this notion, you know, in the process of we lose deals, and I'm not sure how it is for you guys over the years when you used to pitch and still pitch, when we don't speak the language of the buyer. So somebody will come in and they run a semiconductor company. We're probably the best firm to help them sell their company, but we don't understand semiconductors that well. If I can just say, oh, I see you guys are working on a 0.01 micron semiconductor with a 10% better throughput than the AMD chip, and it looks like the 1.2 billion 8088-73 market is converting into a longer tail than people thought, and you should be able to get a ramp up to 200 million. So I don't know. I've never said that, never talked in those terms before. They go, oh, you speak our language, and I can get alignment. If people don't believe you're an insider to their business or industry, then that is step one that you have, you're in danger of losing the sale. I give you a perfect example. I was trying to buy some SaaS subscription software for a video editing platform. And I was asking some questions and they were answering it in the most mundane way. And so So I'm like, hey, can you do 60, you know, hertz throughput and get up to Instagram in three different formats, you know, and do, you know, 6x4, square, and 7x3. And the guy's like, yeah, we do all video formats, right? So I said, listen, you're probably new there. No problem. Don't want to rude you, but give me somebody who knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So the guy texts back, I'm the founder.
Oh my God.
Oh shit.
So he was babying me when I really wanted to know, because I'm not a video insider, but I know I really wanted to know. You know, all he had to say was in a little, you know, 100-word prepared thing. Hey, we do 60 kilohertz, 80 kilohertz, 100 kilohertz to export to all the platforms. That does automatically. You know, we robust, you know, round check and do the security protocols, you know, get upload in 100 milliseconds and you won't see any, you know, hertz latency that you would see, you know, with your regular platform, whatever. Right. And go, oh, this is the same way you go to a mechanic. Right. And you take your Jen. What kind of car are you?
I have a Tesla.
You have a Tesla. Okay, great. That's a perfect example. You take your Tesla down to the local mechanic, right? There's two mechanics. You go to the first one and he goes, yeah, these newfangled things are really cool. We work on these. Tell you what, why don't you leave it here? You know, we'll call you on Monday, let you know what we think. So, I don't know. So I'm going to check, you know, one other place. You go to the next place, a mechanic strolls up, puts his you know, hands in his pockets, scratches his chin, looks at the car for a minute, and he goes, yeah, see this light here? When this blinks, you know, twice, that means the battery has been cycled 33 exactly. times.
Exactly.
You know, that if you look back to the rear blinker, you can see that's dimming as well. So what that means is you've overcharged it, you know, three different times. We see this all the time. We keep a stock of the thermonuclear 1723, you know, bearing surplus on back. It's like
all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about, but you sound like you know it. So this I'm in.
These are the parts that Elon Musk is going to use to take you to the fucking moon.
Yeah. So, and that guy's saying it in a way that he's bored, right? It's like when, after he said it, it seems like he's almost forgot it. And you go, he's done it 1,000 times.
Everyone knows that. Great. He is a mechanic outlier, the same way that the video guy was a video outlier. They've spent their 10,000 hours screwing around with everything. And as a result, they know how it actually works and what it can do for you.
Yeah. And so everybody has that in the business and they think that people don't want to hear that. But that's the first thing they want to hear is expertise, right? And so I show in the book some ways to do that, but the obvious clues are is if you can show real expertise and you could talk sort of faster than anybody could if they were making it up, and you can talk about a problem and the fix, and then somebody goes, I mean, this in every industry, you just, if you can just stream off extremely rapidly insider information, right? You know, as the seller, to the point where the buyer goes, oh my God, this guy's done it 1,000 times. He's
right. I have confidence. I have confidence.
Yeah. And so what this is showing someone you're an expert, not telling them. Mm-hmm. This is where the slides go wrong. We've done, right? Oh, we're a Microsoft preferred vendor. These are 21,000 likes on Instagram. We did this for the king of Dubai, you know, whatever it is. These are, I'm telling you all the things, but I don't know, because you're new to me, if I can or how to believe you. But if you show me you're an expert, and people have trouble doing this because they think anytime they're talking about technical information, that they have to deliver it for comprehension. When you write that you're trying to teach someone about this technical stuff, if you show people that you know it, knowing that they don't need to learn it, they just need to know that you know it. I think about, if you think about a pitch where, you know, if you're pitching servers, right, and the buyer's buying $1 million of servers from you, and they go, they ask a technical question, and you just go, oh, you know, Prajish here, not to stereotype, you know, John, Prajish, Susan, whatever, will tell you a little bit about the server configuration, and then a tech guy comes up and goes, talks about servers for 2 minutes, and then they go, okay, we get it. Get this guy out of here. Let's keep talking about the deal. People want to know that you have competency and expertise, and you have to show them that. So to me, until you've done that, features and benefits and value and ROI and delivery and all that stuff doesn't matter. I won't get to features and benefits probably till I'm 60, 70% through a presentation, because it doesn't matter. You have to prime. You have to prime the buyer for the value. If they're not primed and prepared, the value doesn't matter.
Everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing, that's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you.
So what are you doing during that first 60 to 70% of the presentation?
Yeah. I'm juggling, you know, and
three balls, my balls.
Yeah.
How many balls can you juggle?
Four is my max, yeah. You try five and just with a pea brain like mine.
It just doesn't work.
So once you've established your expertise, unless they believe that their world is changing almost catastrophically, it is very difficult for them to accept your features and benefits and price and buy. See, in today's world, once a buyer knows your features, your benefits, your ROI or your value proposition and your price, the next words out of his mouth are, thank you. Please send me the information and a proposal. I'll talk to my partner, my committee, my board of directors, my fake committee that I made up, my fake partner that I made up. And we'll, if we have any additional questions, we'll get back to you in a week or so. And then they will take your proposal and go to the next guy and say, hey, I can buy this for $70,000, right? And I'm looking to get the same thing for $60,000. So until somebody believes their world is changing dramatically and you know how to survive and prevail and solve problems in the new world order, they cannot buy from you into today. So I'll give you an example of change. There's lots of nuanced things we can talk about. Tariffs, tax regulation, real estate laws, changing to the cloud, the nature of millennials. But let me give you an example to help clarify what I mean by catastrophic change. And I call this winter is coming. Winter is coming, right? So when stadium, you guys aren't old enough, but when stadium seating came to the theater industry, it wiped out every other form of theater, absolutely, with thermonuclear devastating power. Because I'm not talking about the things you guys know, which is like sit in your electric seat and push a button and sushi and beer shows up and, you know, a beautiful waitress, quirky and delightful, asks you, you know, if you'd like mountain raised avocado with your blueberries. I'm just talking about plastic seats that are higher than the seat in front of it. That was stadium seating.
You might be old enough.
I am old enough.
So
I'm old enough to remember when we sat on wooden boxes.
Oh boy. Right.
All right. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, let me tell you. Right.
So if you owned 8 theaters in the Wichita Falls area, right? And I said to you, stadium seating is coming. That meant nuclear winter is approaching. And if you aren't prepared for it and you don't make changes, you're going to be wiped out completely. In fact, anybody, not you, this isn't about you, anybody with flat seating theater who doesn't change in the next 8 months is going to be out of business, not doing a little bit worse. Winter is coming. And until somebody understands the changes will affect them, because a lot of people, if you talk about changes, sometimes people say, well, you know, yeah, that's going to happen, but I'm a do-it-yourselfer and I'm going to wiggle out and figure it out myself, right? That's the difference with trends and things are changing and you need to adapt. This is the cloud, stadium seating, tariffs, the tax regulation, and nobody going to get out of the way of this problem. And it's going to fundamentally change the entire industry. And it's going to take the front runners, Xerox, RIM, BlackBerry, you know,
RIM's not going to change anything. They're lucky if they can change their underwear.
Yeah. And in 3 years.
I want to throw this at you.
Yeah.
If I'm the sales guy and I know that stadium seating is coming, I'm going to have in my bag a hat, a lady's hat. And I'm going to tell the CEO, I need you to sit behind me.
Yeah.
And tell me how you can see.
Yeah.
And he's going to go, what are you talking about? And this is what I'm talking about. And you bring in your own bar stool.
Yeah.
Well, and now you put your hat on and it doesn't mean shit. This is what's coming. Now you want it or you want to die. Those are your two options.
This is what I like about Gittimer, right? Is you guys are showmen and performers. I just talk. So but that's why I'm good at these ideas. Like I will pitch and it might not move one inch to the left or the right in 45 minutes. I just talk, but that means my ideas have to be very stable and solid. But you guys are showmen, which I wish I could do better.
You can listen. You already have the ideas. You just, we're available to show you how to demonstrate. And we're relatively inexpensive compared to the purchase that you're looking to be able to make.
Well, I'll tell you, my one trick is to stand on my hands and light my feet on fire. And
you know, that's hard to do. Yeah. Do they have to be pre-gasolined? I mean, how do you?
Oh, man. Okay. So all of our diehards right now are thinking, cool. Yeah. How do I get ideas like that? So I'm curious, like, how do you come up with these ideas and what can they do to foster more and better ideas?
Well, it's funny. This winter is coming.
Out burgers. You have to have them on a regular basis.
Yeah. Did you guys watch any of the 8 seasons of Game of Thrones?
No.
Okay. So the thing about Game of Thrones, forget all the nefarious stuff and the rumors, but they had so many characters in so many complex situations, in impossible scenarios that could not be resolved, right? I mean, you heard about it in the media. So what they came up with is winter is coming. And whenever they got in too much trouble with the plot twist and nothing could be organized, they just go, winter is coming, right? And it would get colder and it organized every character, every plot twist back to when you could understand it, which was there was a catastrophic environmental event and you had to get in a tribe, you had to collect food and get somewhere warm or you were going to die. It is this incredible unifying idea. Things are going to change. Now, in the book, I talk about it, and this one's very easy to understand at scale. Microsoft today, most valuable company on earth, right? Almost was the least valuable company on earth in the last 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. They just barely made the leap to the cloud. You know, they had Word and they had Windows and they saw that business, on-premise business, going away, right? And for them, every industry has its own nuclear winter. For them, it was the cloud because they were so big, they had to leave billions of dollars behind and jump to a business that they weren't in. And so how to use it is, you know, these are the things, you know, the tariffs are, anyway, it's obvious how to use it. So the other thing, going back to your original question, is what do I do before I do features and benefits? And I came up with this idea called pre-wired ideas. And I'm sure you guys do it naturally, but I want to break it down. So I am the patron saint of tough deals. People come to me with genetics, semiconductors, brain aneurysm coils. Nobody ever comes and goes, I got a longer lasting car tire. I got a lollipop that tastes better, right? I have ice cream, you know, that doesn't give you brain freeze. Like whatever, I get, you know, a genetic device that, you know, has 1 micron more efficiency in DNA encoding, which leads to another 200 availability of disease prognosis over a 5-year communicable period. How do I pitch it? I need $20 million. So that's what people bring me, is the most complex, hard to explain things. And so you go into an investor or a buyer or whatever it is, you have to explain semiconductors, you know, genetics, brain aneurysm coils. It's all fascinating, but it's hard to explain. I know you guys get all the I know you guys are soaking up all the easy deals and dumping. So a deal comes to you and you go, oh no, no, hell no, I'm not doing this. This is an orange class deal. Send this one to California. That idiot will take it. Like Mikey, let Mikey eat it.
Right, exactly. You need to change your name. I'm the patron saint of Mikey.
Yeah. So I get the tough deals. So, oh, they're so tough. So I was driving my car, which I love cars. Please, guys, come out and visit me and we'll let you take some fun cars out.
All right. Cars.
On the road?
No.
Just like look at them.
Yeah. Just sit in it in the warehouse.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm driving and I'm down the beach. I'm hear this thing on NPR and it's in the background. I'm not really paying attention. And they're talking about sort of a science of addiction. And they get to cocaine, and which I know nothing about, fortunately. And so it turns out that cocaine isn't just this like chemical substance that you feed the brain and the brain goes bonkers. Oh, what is this stuff? It's crazy. I've never seen this before. It's driving me nuts. The reason apparently cocaine works is because there's receptors in the brain that understand that chemical and it gives it a ton of that chemical, right? And super saturates it. But it's not that it's never seen it before and gets really excited. It's that it has seen it before. It knows what cocaine is and what to do with it and how to process it. There's these set receptors for it. And then I started thinking, was there any way that there's pre-wired receptors in the brain for ideas, not just chemicals? And so I started talking to people. I talked to Matt Nix, who was the showrunner for Burn Notice, or, you know, show that went through 6 or 7 seasons. And he's a pitch guy, Hollywood. He goes, you know, this is an interesting idea because there's only 7 movie plots. There's only 7 movie plots in the world. If you don't have one of those plots, you're not doing a show and you're not doing a movie. I go, what are they? Man against man against nature, man against himself, man against the elements, man against woman, right? 2 men against man, whatever. There's like 7. And if you go to a studio and you're trying to sell your movie and it's not one of those themes, then you're an art house movie. You're not, you know, that Avengers Infinity War It's probably all seven of those combined. But anyway, so this led me down this area. I said, I think you could take these really complex ideas that we all have and put them in a format that there's pre-wired receptors in the brain, right? And it would just be accepted, boom, through, no explanation. And so one of them was winter is coming. And that turns out that everybody responds immediately to environmental threats and they pay attention. The second thing is everybody wants to know, what do I get, right? So everybody wants it. So if you characterize what's in it for me, right, is the pre-wired. So what semiconductors would, and people want to get not a little bit more, but a huge amount, right? So ancient humans couldn't change what they were doing unless they would get a huge benefit, a lot more meat, a lot more fire, a lot more woman, a lot more cave, a lot more space. And so we're wired to get a lot. So if you're offering a little, an improvement, the brain doesn't pay attention. You're out. And the other one was trust, right? The pre-wired idea of trust. So why you? Not, right? So a lot of people offer value and a lot of people can say, hey, you know, everything's going to the cloud. If you don't get your accounting system up on the cloud, you're going to be behind and not be able to compete and not know the changes to the IRS code or whatever. So winter is coming. Two times as much, and why you? If you can answer those ideas in somebody's mind, then they're prepared for your features and benefits and your value proposition.
Well, that was an interview and an interview. Arn talked about speaking the language of the buyer, but I'm asking you as a diehard, you know what to do. You just don't do it well. You are condescending to buyers in many instances, and you're yeah, 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 and you're trying to make your point. What Arn is telling you to do is stop making your point, start listening in a different manner, and start to affirm the fact of what they say so that the sale is yours.
Language is such a tricky thing. It's making me think about like being in a foreign country and speaking a different language than the other people that you're with and them just like totally not getting it and being on a different page. And then until it like clicks, like my mom went to Paris when she was, you know, young in her teens, and she was telling our French family that only spoke French at the time, that she wanted to see the Eiffel Tower. And she's like, you know, please, like the Eiffel Tower, Eiffel Tower. Like if you say it slower, they might get it, right? And they had no idea, literally no idea what she was talking about. And then she drew it on a piece of paper. And they're like, ah, oui, la Tour Eiffel. Like, it's like such a different concept, but it's the same exact thing when you're sitting in the room with your prospect. If you're not making it seem like it's there, if they don't feel like it's their idea, they're not going to want to do it.
So when you're talking to that buyer, make sure the accent is on the buyer, not on you.
Ooh, I like it. That's right. That's right. It has to be all about them. I mean... Hello.
Only way to fly. Now, Arn has this new concept in this new book called Flip the Script, and it's about giving customers their own idea. And I wonder if you're willing to give away the idea or want to take credit for the idea. I wonder.
I thought it was really interesting because we were talking to someone who's your advocate this week, and well, you were talking and I was eavesdropping. And she was saying how it wasn't her boss's idea, so she didn't know if they what the next step would be.
Right.
Because he likes to have it as his idea.
Right. And she lost because she took ownership of the idea thinking it would be great, but the bottom line was boss wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
Boss wanted it his way or highway.
And he wanted to think it was his way. And if she had at least just suggested it in a way that like could have made him.
Yeah. What do you think of this idea? And What do you think we should add to it?
And yeah, if this is our goal, how can we go about achieving it? Hint, hint.
Right. So the bottom line for you, diehard, is you have to speak the language of the customer in their accent, with their clarification models, with their reinforcing statements, with the questions that are going to draw out from them the things that they are looking to achieve, their outcome, their after the purchase results. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
One question I do have, though, for you, Jeffrey, because, again, we started talking about this, giving folks their own ideas or selling their own ideas or creating inception. How much of that translates to what you've always said, which is giving the customer value without expecting anything in return?
Well, this is the challenge, Nada, and that's an excellent thought in terms of being able to clarify the process. If you're giving value to someone, they have to perceive that it is actual value. So it's called perceived value rather than just value. So it's giving perceived value first. And that way the customer goes, oh, I get that. Oh, we need that. Oh, that's exactly what we're trying to do here now. And you get that confirmation sort of talk, and the language is affirming what it is that you're trying to convey. As a salesperson, you have to listen for that confirming language. It's only a little bit, and you can't ask something like, well, what do you think of that? Because if you have to ask what they're thinking, it ain't good. And what you want to be able to do is get them into a dialogue, not a monologue, that will affirm the fact that your idea is right on track.
But I think so much of this is like the old way of selling versus the new way of selling, because so many people have been taught you have to sell. And this is not really about selling anymore. This is about creating demand for your thing, whatever your thing may be, product, service, widget, whatever, and creating that demand through their eyes, making them feel like, okay, I need this. Now you're my solution. Because if you can make the customer feel like you're their solution, now somehow it's like, well, they decided that. You didn't push it on them. They decided that.
Emotionally, I want to make their eyes water.
Aw.
And but I want to make them salivate.
Are you talking about a dog?
No, but I don't I also don't want to confuse that with my back teeth are watering, which means I gotta pee. But I think
All right, it's time to go, folks. It's time to go.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
I thought you were going to say even if you have to pee.
No, I couldn't do that.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.